Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every week at Monday at 11 o'clock, where we discuss different topics, different issues, everything to do with education, but really everything to do with what can we learn and what is out there for us to be better people? How can we be the people we want to be in the world we want to live in? Influence ourselves, our families, our communities. What can we do to make this happen and to make a special reality and to really be in the space we want to be in? We, as you heard from the song in the beginning, if we call it a song, but it was a vocal song without live music. And it is because we are in our very difficult days leading up to Rosh Chodesh Av, which will be on Wednesday, starting that period of mourning. And these are days that we are thinking and reflecting, but we're also going to be looking at the good today. And just like last week, we actually spoke about nutrition in schools, etc. And we looked at it also from the angle of what's happening in the inner sides of the city and difficulties. Today, we're going to focus really on that and doing that good, spreading that special help and positivity in anything that can be helpful. And I'm here today with a few very special people from an organization that does this good work all the time. And, you know, specifically when we think about it, coming up to Mandela Day, which many of us are going to take on those 67 minutes. And we also need to remember that there's many of us, or not many enough, probably, that are doing this all year round. And all year round are worried and looking after other people and other communities. And today I'm here with an education town, it's called, the Maharishi Invincibility Institute. And let's get to know them and speak a bit about what they're doing. Firstly, I'm going to say good morning to Ariella Abramson. Good morning, Ariella. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Rabbi. Thank you so much for having our team on. We are super, super excited to be here and, you know, having this conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be special and amazing. And really, we're going to see what we can learn from you guys and how we can, as individuals, support as well. Ariella, just to get to know you, a word about yourself and about your role in the organization.
So my name is Ariel Abramson, and I work for this unbelievable organization called the Maharishi Invincibility Institute. And it is an organization that promotes world-leading education for all, but we specifically target those who are living in poverty. And within this ecosystem, we have developed a concept slash reality called Education Town, with the goal of transforming the Joburg CBD into the world's largest education innovation district, ranging from sports and recreation to different schools and vocational academies. And within that, my role is to work under partnerships, as well as focusing on heading up very, very specialized programs and innovations inside of the organization.
Wow. Okay, so let's continue and see other people from the team. We always learn, and we speak often about it, that a hungry child doesn't learn. And I want to say good morning to the head chef of your organization. And good morning to, I lost your name right now, Anthony Morris. You are the head chef of the organization. Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Rabbi, and good morning to the listeners. Thank you for having us on. My name is Anthony. I'm the chief of the Maharishi Institute. And as you mentioned, a hungry child doesn't learn. And that's how the kitchen was formed. So we're responsible for cooking just over 1,500 meals every day for all students and staff. And so I run a kitchen of 20 people, and we produce lunch every day for our students and staff.
And 20 people working, you produce how many portions a day?
1,500 portions every day.
Wow. Sounds like a lot of work and a lot of food and a lot of difference here making to a lot of people's lives. We'll get back to that. And I want to say good morning to Megan, who is the head of the development strategies. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning, Rabbi. Good morning, listeners. Thank you for having us on today. Yes, I'm the development strategist at Maharishi. I'm absolutely passionate about young people and just love the youth of this country and the talent and gold that we see in them every day. So honored to be part of this organization and to be able to cultivate these young adults.
Okay. Megan, we'll start with you. What does the development strategies position mean? Your focus, what are you developing? What are you looking at in the wider picture?
So I sit within the partnership team, but I think we know that we cannot do this alone. Essentially, we are a non-fee-paying university. So without our partners, and we've partnered with some incredible organizations, I don't want to name them in case I forget some,
okay.
But we've partnered with some really incredible organizations, and without them, it wouldn't be possible. We've educated over 26,000 young adults to date since inception. And as I say, it's a non-fee-paying university. So from a development strategist point of view, sitting in the partnership side of things, it's about getting the word out and, having those conversations with those that don't know about us, because we are in the middle of the CBD. A lot of people are a bit afraid to come down to the CBD until you come and see what we're really doing. So it's about getting the word out. It's about networking with people. And, we've set up a lot of academies with our some of our partners, where we've done insurance academies, we've done cybersecurity academies. So our students we've got a 95% absorption rate, employment rate, that they all essentially walk into meaningful employment. And I think that's our thing that we love to shout about the most, because it's all good and well educating students in this country, but there are millions of people sitting with degrees that cannot get into the formal workplace. So I think that's our biggest thing. Without our partners, without having these organizations that we can put students into meaningful work in these organizations, we wouldn't be able to do it. And that's my big goal, is just getting to more and more organizations so that we can collaborate.
Okay. What are the challenges we see often when it comes to employment and when it comes to actually utilizing your degree, besides for social emotional skills and being able to push yourself and to connect and to actually be motivated? A debate we've had quite often was about also, is there a bit of a mentality of, I'm going to wait till the government looks after me, I'm going to wait till somebody helps me or somebody supports me, and I'm not going to push through and create my own opportunity in my own space? If I'm not mistaken, I heard about your academy a few years ago, and when I heard about it, there was a discussion about students being involved in educating others and actually starting the push of creating their own realities and not only waiting for someone to come and be there for them. Ariel, maybe if you could elaborate more on how the system actually works, and does that create a bit of a change in the attitude of the students towards actually employment and moving on?
So that's a really, really beautiful question, because you're speaking to the philosophy and the heart and soul of what the leadership is trying to instill in the students and what the students is ultimately trying to instill in us. So our focus is something called consciousness-based education, whereby we focus on developing the individual and their inner potential, as well as partnering, developing the individual's competencies to achieve. And we're removing all these geopolitical factors that come into play around the role of government and the role of grants, where there is a place for that and there is a position for that. But we're saying, let's shift and let's start to empower these students around awareness and around who they are and what their values are. And partnering with that, we're then taking these students and placing them in an environment which is empowering them to channel those skills and channel those competencies.
So Ariel, we're going to continue this after a short break. What you're saying initially is, before, look at what the government, the country has done for you, look at what you can do for the country, but even do for yourself and your ability to push forward and be in that environment. And I want to hear more about this environment and how to create that so we can learn from you as well. We'll just need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue with this question specifically.
Learn more at loveyourfellow.com.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we are in quite in the beginning of a fascinating discussion I'm having with a few of the individuals of the leaders of the Maharishi Invincibility Institute. And we are discussing about what they have created in the inner side of the CBD of Joburg, an institution where youngsters can come and learn and develop and get their degrees and really take ownership and responsibilities. And right before the break, Ariel was speaking about the environment they've created of owning up to what you want to achieve and what you want to create and how you give back and how you lead yourself without waiting on other people to be there for you or rescue you. And I stopped you right before you explained about the environment. So let's go back there.
We have a really, really beautiful environment that doesn't exist in other institutions. And just for context, we start a preschool all the way up to PhD. So we are accommodating for all students, and we're starting to develop their mind from a very young age. And our model is something called consciousness-based education, whereby we are trying to develop the individual into the best part of themselves, to tap into focusing, resilience, and well-being. But within that, we have holistic education. So we're not just focusing on getting that degree, but we're focusing, as Chef Anthony touched on, nutrition, as Megs was touching on, you know, partnering and creating a stress-free environment around it being financially accessible to students and to their communities. And within that, we're always trying to promote a leadership aspect. So, for example, one of our features is the learn and earn model, where students gain work experience, and then they are always taking some of that financials, and that they are then paying it forward towards another student. So they're learning about responsibility and what money means, and helping to shift the money mindset that they have inherently been taught, specifically from a background of intergenerational poverty. So we also have a very, very particular type of staff that work there. And there's a lot of mentorship and love. And, you know, we're all driven by a sense of purpose, particularly around education and the role of education in South Africa and, you know, in the students' lives holistically.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, one of the things you mentioned is a stress-free environment. And I want to explore this from a few angles, but I'm sure, Chef Anthony, you have a major part in creating a stress-free environment. Chef, from your understanding, what are the nutrition needs when it comes to the students, the reality of people living in the CBD? Is it really a question of just a lunch like every one of us needs, or they're actually lacking more of the nutrition? There's a bigger need. There's actually a real stress in the day-to-day life. Like, what are we going to manage with this? And even more so a concern, what are we going to eat when there's semester break and there's no university?
So it's quite important. It's not just one meal or lunch, as you put it. For many of the students, this is the only meal that they have for the day. So my team's responsibility is to make sure that the meal is well balanced. There's protein, there's vegetables, it's all healthy. And then, for example, during winter, we'll do ginger tea, because ginger is healing, has healing components to it. So we use turmeric, natural spices that brings natural healing. But definitely for me, semester breaks, school holidays are the worst, because the students that rely on this meal, so we don't like it. And then also what we've done is we go a step forward, where students that really need the extra meal can bring an extra container. And if there's any leftovers, they can dish up afterwards to take home or have for the families for supper. So we kind of pay it forward that way. We've also partnered with Food Forward SA, and we have a breakfast and dinner support program for students that are really in need, so they can register with our Department of Student Affairs, and then they sort of get a package weekly. But it's important. It's not only about the food or having a meal. It's about having a good, nutritious meal. We're completely vegan, vegetarian. And so we try and make it well balanced with variety. And our students love the food.
That's actually a important factor if we start from the end, and that it actually does, you know, they enjoy it, so it does take away the stress component. Speaking about also the food and also all the other stresses, Megan, you spoke about reaching out and connecting to other organizations. What is the support you need from other organizations, but also other individuals? I mean, if anybody is listening and hearing and saying, okay, sounds amazing, is there something you would need back, any support, anything? What are the connections you're looking at?
How long do we have?
67 minutes.
Great. Our list is very long, Rabbi, just because we are dealing with big numbers. But I think really it's just about, you know, we see the gaps in the organization in terms of what the need is. And then we'll have a lot of partners that come to our breakfast. We host a monthly breakfast every month, which would be wonderful if anyone's listening and would like to come. Please do get in touch. I don't know if we're going to leave details after this. And really, I think it's mostly just putting these students through university. There is a cost to that. So, and through high school, there is a cost to that. So we look at the bursaries and the learnership side of things. You know, there's a cost to us feeding them. There's a cost to everything that we do. There is a cost to that. So there's that side. And then there's also the infrastructure. You know, we slowly but surely, we are taking over the whole of the CBD. We have just launched our Field of Dreams, which means our students can actually physically play on grass, which is, in our culture, it's imperative that we bring sport into our everyday learning. So we've launched a Field of Dreams. So there's a lot of sports equipment that we need. I mean, at this stage, we're looking for desks and chairs for students to sit on. 4,000 chairs, if anyone's listening. There is so much that people can help with. Sometimes it's also just people coming in and giving their expertise, you know, and that's what we also love. We love people that just want to get involved with the students and mentor them. And
so let's talk about that a bit more, because, you know, I'm sure the donations and the things are extremely important, and we hear that regularly from organizations. But when we come to Mandela, they were talking about actual skill and individuals getting involved and being able to support. What are the human resources talents that people can just be of a support of hand and step in and maybe have sometimes or ability to get involved?
That's a great question, Rabbi. And I think we so often do get a lot of people coming forward and saying they'd love to just mentor the students and chat to them. So I think, you know, right now, Ariel is quite heavily involved with the Security Mastery Academy, where we've got a whole lot of students that are basically keeping us safe in the CBD. There's nearly up to 400 students that are learning security. They are coming from really intense emotional traumatic backgrounds, as you can imagine. So we are on a mission right now to give them that psychosocial support so that they can come to work and not be thinking about what's happening at home and the abuse and the fact that they hadn't eaten all weekend and all of that, you know. So psychosocial support, we do put a lot of emphasis on. We've obviously got the meditation and whatnot that is built into our everyday curriculum. But we are looking for partners that are willing to give us that kind of support from a psychosocial perspective.
Okay, amazing. Ariel, from your side, when you look at the work that has been doing and, you know, hearing from Megan how, yes, you're an educational institution, but you look after food and you look at the social emotional. Where do you draw the line between your involvement and where you say, okay, there's a limitation of how much we can get involved with. We need to focus on what we're doing, or perhaps you say, no, every student, we're there till the end, no matter what. Is there a framework that we're looking at?
That's such an interesting question, because
you're tapping into two pockets. On one hand, the pocket of what charity is and what philanthropy is and what giving is. And often there's an association between going and working with an NPO or with an NGO and having to give, right? And it becomes almost like a personal question of, you know, what's mine and what's my boundary versus what's not. And with us, we are a university, right? Talking about the higher education. And the same way as you are going to a WITS or a UJ and you are getting tertiary education, we are accommodating to the needs of almost the forgotten sector of society. We are targeting students who just don't have access to resources or opportunities, and we're building a framework and a model around the best interest of that student. So sometimes there needs to be a psychological differentiation between what is giving and what is charity versus what is actually developing an individual in an environment. And, you know, we're also creating structures, because part of our model is we go to corporate and we flip the model on its head and we say, what do you need, right? So for example, CAP security. We have gone to CAP and we have said to CAP, what do you need? What does the future of tactical security look like? And we have developed a model in partnership with them across 3 years to have these, the Navy, how does our CEO refers to it as the Navy, the security Navy SEALs, or I don't actually know how he frames it, of the industry. So, you know, you can comment.
No. I'm with you on that. Okay. So that sounds more like a college of demand and seeing what the market needs and creating those jobs, which is an amazing opportunity. And with that, what is the buy-in? Because there's almost a question coming out of what you're saying, because on the one hand, you're talking about recruiting, making sure you're known and more students are coming. On the other hand, it's almost shocking that you would need to say that when you're sitting in the CBD, offering all of this for free, creating a stress-free environment, creating job opportunity, creating everything for them. Why are you recruiting?
When you say recruiting, recruiting students.
Saying students, yeah, making sure everybody knows about you, making sure you're known and seen, when it seems to be that you should be in a position that everybody would be coming to you.
So we actually don't directly recruit, and we don't usually promote via word of mouth. It's usually students who are saying, this is where we're at, and they come to us.
Okay.
But, you know, the truth is awareness around what poverty is and the broader South Africa is a really important conversation and topic. So, you know, although we're recruiting for students in inverted commas, we're also trying to recruit for the mindset of the South African population to say, there is ways to be different. There is ways to think about things in an innovative way. Systems can change, and it just requires a compassion and a reflection of what change can be. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword slash question that you are posing. And I think that's almost where the magic of change lies.
Right. So, you know, I'll comment on that. We had a fascinating discussion here on Youth Day with, in studio, we had on the one hand some youth leaders from different organizations and different parts of Africa and very diverse. On the other hand, we had some of the leaders of the movement in 1970s. And one of our guests who's made it very, very well, I mean, he's a well-known psychologist. And if you look at his Wikipedia, I mean, we don't have enough time to read everything every time we speak. It's amazing what he's accomplished. He started off and personally being in jail during apartheid together with Mandela. And when we came to the differences between the youth then and today, from a youth that was fighting for what they wanted and believed in something and went all out to make that happen, we were hearing more and more from the younger people in the studio about why aren't we getting opportunity? Why isn't the government giving us jobs? Why isn't the government giving us schooling? I'm assuming that when I finish school, I'll have a job. I'm assuming, we never assumed years ago that if you finish school, you had a job. So something is shifting. How are you investing in changing that mindset of stand up and fight for what you want to achieve in life instead of fight for your rights, but fight for your abilities?
That's such a beautiful question. So I don't know if my colleagues want to step in, but part of our model, there's two legs. The one is entrepreneurship and developing that mindset. So there's a lot of informal trading that goes on campus. So they learn how to, you know, manage money. You know, we call them side hustles. The second thing is the students, you know, we're not taking from the students. We're empowering them. So we say, these are your opportunities and these are the resources. What are you going to do with them and how are you going to show up?
Right.
So with, you know, again, like your question's linking into a bigger existential crisis around what is going on at the heart of South Africa around politics and around the future of education and the
about
future
youth.
Of employment.
No, specifically about the mindset of the youth and the mindset of the students of where they're going with this. Maybe we'll go over to Anthony a second. Anthony, your vibe is a chef that everybody's your friend. Like, I have a feeling that every student at university has some kind of chat with you sometime. What are you feeling from them?
So for us, our students, obviously there's the social economic challenges they face, but any student that comes in within the first 3 months says how totally MI has changed their lives, and we get to see it. So you're taking someone that's been hopeless, has no vision for the future, and within 3 to 6 months to a year, that whole outlook on life has changed, and this person now has had an opportunity to study, they get to feed, they get to start a business on campus. So we support and you would advise and you'd give advice on what they could sell, and they use that money to pay for their transport, to come through to school. We've had a student that started it and she could take her friends and herself to Cape Town on a holiday. We've had students that have started a business. There's a guy that's about to supply spinach for us, and he's based in Soweto. He's started with his community a spinach farm, and he's going to supply us our spinach. So the vibe that I'm picking up is that there's the CBD is the future, and they buy into the education town. They buy into the 100,000 leaders we want to create, because that's where we're going to change South Africa. That's how we're going to change the CBD. So yes, maybe when they come into the academy or into MI, there's a handout system, but we're building it on a paid forward system where we're taking the student and showing them that they in charge of their own destiny and of their own life. And you see that change drastically, and you see how they get involved with the sports, our sports department, in terms of the choir, and how our choir is run by students. You see it with our staffing. 70% of our staff is previous graduates. So
wow.
That shows, yeah, so, you know, so 70% of our staff around is previous graduates. So they're paying it forward, giving it back. So I think more and more we see a change in mindset where it's not about what can government do, but what can we do for ourselves and how can we create this? You know, people have moved out of the CBD. Big companies have moved out, but through Josie Majozi, Standard Bank, MI, you're seeing a revival of a part of the inner city that sooner or later will extend, because there's a vibe, there's a student vibe. Anybody working, we have 3 campuses in the CBD, and you walk between the 3 campuses and it's a student vibe. Lunchtime, and you think, wow, we've created this inner city vibe, and students are positive. So definitely there's a change in attitude, and a positive attitude.
Unbelievable. And we need to take a break, but I think that, Anthony, you answered this in one sentence. Out of everything you said, one word caught my ear, or whatever caught me, is you said that we shift the mindset into hope. And I think hope is the biggest motivator. And what we'll do right after break, when we come back, is I want each of you to give from your perspective, how are you creating this hope? Because it sounds like this is the biggest factor that is motivating the students to actually create, to lead, to make things happen, to teach themselves, to work, to be, and to take that amazing shift in such a short time of 3 to 6 months from how can you help me to how can I help myself? I think that hope is the biggest factor. So we will take a short break and we'll come right back into that discussion.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
Amazing. 101.9, Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we are here with a fascinating discussion with a group of people that are creating incredible work in the inner side of the CBD. They are the Maharishi in the Vincibility Institute, and their work is all around creating this hope and ability with they are a university, but they look way beyond that for after their students. And right before the break, Chef Anthony mentioned about the hope that is helping the youngsters shift into the work they need to do. And I want to ask each of you, what is your vision of what in your institution is creating that hope that is creating this amazing shift? Ariel.
The human connection between the students and the staff and the students with the other students.
Okay. As simple as that.
As simple as that.
Okay. And the human connection, meaning, because there is a human connection beforehand of receiving, and for somehow you're managing to shift them from receivers to providers and to being able to be leaders. I guess it's a human connection of trust, belief, a bit more deeper relationship, I'm guessing. I don't know, Megan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, hope is not just a feeling, but at MI, it is an actual experience, because every day we get students walking through our doors believing that they don't have a future and they have really nothing. You know, it is dismal out there. We have to be honest. Our unemployment rate is really bleak, but they walk out with a qualification and a job. And I think most importantly, it is giving them dignity. And that hope really is an experience. It's something felt, and it's, you know, they go into their workspaces, they support their families. For most of our students, they have no one in their family has got a degree. They go into their workspaces, they support an entire family. That family then can support part of the community, and it's that ripple effect, you know? So it's, for me, it's an experience, and what they experience when they walk through our doors.
How do you separate that? Ariel, how do you separate when you're creating this environment that a student comes in and full of hope and energy and be able to actually thrive, knowing very well that at home, they're going to go back and meet people that don't have that hope and don't have that vibe and are struggling, and they almost need to live, I don't want to say a double life, but two separate lives completely. How do you balance it?
You know, it's a good question. So I don't sit in the classrooms with the students and have the hands-on experience on that level. My interaction and my connection is really understanding, firstly, the world of entrepreneurship and the role of finances in developing the students' well-being and what that means for their families. And then it sits in a few other pockets as well. And, you know, when you actually listen to the students, is that they just don't have a choice. They hustle and they move and they make it happen. They don't get stuck in almost the trauma of it. There's no time. You know, they're coming to a university where their days are 10 hours long. It's very structured. They have a higher purpose, a higher vision, a higher mission. And as the staff body, we're always trying to enable that and perpetuate that shift in what poverty is to them and what their future looks like for them.
Okay. I'm wondering, you know, while you're watching this whole thing happen, and actually not only watching, making it happen, you are working with people that are coming from extreme poverty, difficult lives, challenges, and creating hope. We many times are, and part of our listeners are from the other side, from people that we can manage financially. Maybe we're stressed financially, but we know what we're going to eat tomorrow or the next day. We know that we live in a house and we know that we're managing. What can we learn from your students that will impact our lives?
That's such a beautiful question. I think kindness, you know, and just recognizing, I mean, it's a standard cliche of just realizing that there's always a human behind the face and behind the story. And it's about just recognizing that soul and connecting on that level.
Okay.
Can I add?
Yes, definitely.
Sorry, I just wanted to, I agree, kindness is everything. Kindness is what makes the world go round. But I also think our students, what I've really learned is grit and resilience. They are unbelievably resilient. And I think that is a big part of what is missing in a lot of our young adults that you were referring to earlier, is that resilience. Oh, I'll apply for this job, I don't get it. Why is nobody coming to rescue me, you know? And they don't have that mindset at Maharishi. And we spend a lot of time focusing on gratitude and focusing on, you know, focusing on the whole person. It's not just about getting a degree and an education, because we're living in a hard world, you know? So we focus on the whole person. But their resilience and their grit is really, from my perspective, what sets them apart.
It's fascinating, because a lot of behind the scenes of the work of this show is actually put people together, from professionals to organizations to networks, etc. And we're currently working on a project between some of the rehabs that have been here and some of the organizations in the ground in the townships that are dealing with similar challenges that you are, not an academic institution, what you're doing, but sometimes with younger kids. And by having the recovering addicts and people who are struggling with addiction meet the kids on the ground is really life-changing for both sides, for being able to see that grit and resilience when it's there, and being able to see on the other side, you know, how people can fight for something and not fall into drugs and not slip and have hope. It's really a fascinating connection, which sounds almost like you're doing that shift single-handed in that mindset between how people come in and how they end, which is really impressive. We do need to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going to start heading towards the end of the show. Stay connected with everything Chai FM across all your favorite social media platforms. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at 101.9 Chai FM, from the latest news and community updates to competitions, behind-the-scenes content, and everything in between. There's always something happening on our pages. Hit follow, turn on your notifications, and never miss a moment with Chai FM.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we're here discussing pretty much at the end of the show. So if you're just joining in and just picking up, then I highly recommend that you go to the podcast and hear more about this. And we are here, you know, preparing for Mandela Day, speaking to the people that are on ground and doing the work. And I'm here with the Maharishi institution. And before we end, I want to ask the three of you the same question I've been asking pretty much for a decade on this show, at the end of every show. And the question is, on a personal level, what do you wish and hope that we know or do different for a better future for our society? Megan, I'll start with you. What do you wish and hope for a better future for our society?
I think I wish and hope that we didn't do things in silos any longer. You know, that we didn't see people for color or for gender or for, you know, that we saw people for who they are, because it's dividing us and it's breaking us apart. And I think it's so important that if we want this country to flourish and thrive, that we don't look at religion, gender, race, and we look at people for who they are, and we collaborate and we come together as we have the most beautiful country. I mean, I'm sure most of us have traveled and had the privilege of traveling, but there's nowhere like South Africa. And, you know, I think just we need to stop looking at it as doom and gloom and just come together and support each other and look past those barriers.
Amazing. Please God, we do get that, and we see that together. Anthony?
For me, it's really simple, that we keep cooking, that we break bread and share bread across our communities. You know, South Africa has so many different cultures, subcultures, food experiences, and I get to experience it at MI through cooking different things and cooking for different people and, you know, learning about it. And I think it's just learning about each other's cultures and embracing it and just being one. But it's also not giving up on the hope that the country is gone or that there's no future. The youth is there. The youth is taking over. We see it with the change in the inner city. If anybody knows about education down, you'll see the change, and that change is real. It's tangible. You can feel it. I've worked in some of the best hotels and restaurants in the industry, and I get more fulfillment for cooking every day for students and providing this meal, because it's not just a meal. It's more than that.
Amazing. Ariel?
For me, it's to keep the faith, to keep innovating, and just shift the mindset. You know, catch yourself when you are going down that rabbit hole of worry and anxiety, and just know that you have the power to change. You are the direction of innovation and what the future can be.
Amazing. So really, I think all of this together will definitely lead us to a better future. And all I could say is thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you to Anthony Morris for all the work you do and joining. Thank you to Megan Leo. Thank you to Ariella Abramson. Thank you to all of you at the Maharishi. And the full name is the Maharishi Invincibility Institution. And really incredible work. And thank you for sharing and joining. And please, God, we will get that connection. I'll chat to you after the show about a specific thing that came up. I think we can create something that will support from of one of the needs you put up there, as we do in this show. Thank you. So thank you for being here. Thank you, Senna, for putting the interviews in place. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. And thank you to our listeners that are with us week after week, Monday at 11 o'clock. In the meantime, until we come back next Monday, enjoy the rest of the shows. There's great content, great stuff. Stay with us on Chai FM. We will be back next week at Monday, 11 o'clock.